Hello and welcome to the Torah Simcha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlian and today we will be studying Parshas Matos. In this series we will be splitting Parshas Matos and Maaseh. In Eretz Yisrael they will be laning these two Parshios separately, and in Chutz La'aretz we will be laning them together as one unit, and after which we will be again in sync. Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz will be in sync once again. And Baruch Hashem, I have the zechus of recording this as I sit in Eretz Yisrael. So there's this powerful energy out there. It connects others, it can heal and nurture and build great societies. But that same energy, if used in the wrong manner, instead of being able to build, it can destroy. It can be transformed into a weapon so sophisticated it can pinpoint a target with precision. That energy is the power of speech. As Shlomo HaMelech tells us in Sefer Mishlei, Maves v'chayim biyad halashon, life and death are in the hands of the tongue. At the beginning of Parshas Matos, Bnei Yisrael are on the eastern border of the land. They have this monumental task ahead of them, entering into the land, engaging in battle, marching forth, proud, a proud nation, and we expect this climactic speech, a speech perhaps about bravery, military prowess, and soon they will be told about engaging in war with Midian. Yet there is something very anticlimactic that goes on at the beginning of Parshas Matos. There is a detailed guide, detailed laws regarding the laws of oaths, of nedarim, and the importance of keeping a neder, a commitment, and who can nullify those nedarim. And as they were about to embark in more warfare against a people who have lured them to engage in the most base and animalistic behavior with Baal Pa'ar in conjunction with tremendous immorality, perhaps at this juncture it is indeed important to remind them that now that they are embarking on war, in war with Midian, who really represents something very base and animalistic, to impart upon them the fact that they are distinct from the animal kingdom. They are human beings. They have this elevation of being a human being and part of Klal Yisrael. And that distinction is obvious because a human being has the Koach HaDibor. Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, as we know. The Targum translates this as the Ruach Memalala. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man the ability to elevate himself via the mechanism of speech. And therefore, these mitzvos of Nidarim are important to mention here as they are about to enter into war with Midian, which is one of the prerequisites for entering into the land, beginning a society and an infrastructure. They need to understand that they are a noble people and that their speech gives them this nobility. So yes, Hamaves v'hachayim biyad halashon, this is a weapon. You're going out to war with Midian. We need to engage in battle using traditional warfare and weapons, but there is another weapon that is just as important, and that is the power of speech. The power of speech can build, the power of speech can destroy. So aside from this whole Indian speaking about the power, the necessity to keep one's word, we also expand this idea to the notion, to the idea of the power of speech in general. The Torah cautions, Ish ki yidor neder, etc., lo yachel devaro, kol hayotze mipiv ya'aseh. A person who makes a neder, an oath, has to keep his oath, and he should not violate this oath. Anything that comes out of his mouth, he should do. He should not go back on his word. And this lashon of lo yachel devaro is used to indicate the importance of not allowing speech to be made into something chol, into something chulin, it says Rashi. As they are preparing to set up a new society, they are about to embark in warfare, they are reminded of their humanity. And part of that humanity is to sanctify their words, is to use their speech to elevate. And one of those ways is by guarding what they say and keeping their word. Integrity is a way of life. And that speech is that energy of choice that we have. We use that power of speech to elevate ourselves through the mechanism of tefillah, through the mechanism of learning and teaching words of Torah. This was a very important aspect for Klal Yisrael to realize as one of the mindset that they needed to have as they enter into a land and create their new society. And this leads us to the next portion of Parshas Matos, where Bnei Yisrael are told, Nikom nikmas Bnei Yisrael me'es ha-midyanim achar te'asef el amecha. Now they are to put into practical application, where in Parshas Pinchas they were told, Sororis ha-midyanim, consider the Midyanim as enemies, those Midyanim who lured Bnei Yisrael to serve Baal Pa'ar. Now that perspective is put into practical application when they are to take revenge, so to speak, because of the act that they did. They are told to wage war with Midyan because of their role in luring the Jews to serve Baal Pa'ar. And here the Midrash famously points out another example of Moshe's selflessness and focus on his mission, that Moshe's death was directly linked to his fulfilling this mitzvah of engaging in war with the Midyanim. Nikom nikmas bnei Yisrael me'es ha-midyanim achar te'asef el amecha. You will die, you will pass on after this command is fulfilled. Yet Moshe did not delay fulfilling Hashem's command of engaging in war with the Midyanim, and in fact directed bnei Yisrael, hechatzu me'etchem anashim latzava. He immediately gave orders for Bnei Yisrael to enter into this war with Midyan. Pinchas is at the helm of this war. He's kind of finishing off what he already did in Parshas Balak when he killed Zimri and Cusbi, and now he is going full force into this war as well. The division of the nation for this war, says the Torah, is elef lemateh lechol matos Yisrael tishlechu latzava. So 1,000 people, 1,000 soldiers per shevet were going out to war. But there were also, the Medrash points out, and there's different accountings of how many people actually went out. And the Medrash points out that there would be 1,000 soldiers per shevet that would go out to war, 1,000 soldiers per shevet that would stay back in the immediate area of the camp to watch guard over the possessions. And then there would be the same amount of people, 1,000 people, that would be staying back to engage in prayer. Ushnei masar elef litfila, says the Medrash. Speaking, of course, to the dual nature of every endeavor that we take on. We need to invite HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our lives. We need to engage in prayer that whatever goal that we set upon, that goal be successful. And we do this through action, through practical application, through preparation, and through tefillah, through prayer. We can't manage anything in life without tefillah. Bnei Yisrael are victorious over the Midyanim, and along with the kings that were killed, so was Bilam, who only here during this war does the Torah allude to his role in initiating the idea of luring Bnei Yisrael to worship Baal Pa'ar. If we recall back in Parshas Pinchas, Rashi alluded to this, but only here in our parsha, in Parshas Matos, does the Torah explicitly mention it. Nechama Leibowitz posits that although Bilam was the instigator of attempting to tear away at the purity of the Jewish camp, that did not absolve Bnei Yisrael from their culpability for which they were punished, and therefore there's no mention of Bilam's role in that terrible incident at Shittim until here, at this point, where Bnei Yisrael were at war with Midyan. Bilam is getting what he deserved. Ve'ez Bilam ben Ba'ar hargu b'charev. And then later on, the pasuk says, Hein heina hayu libnei Yisrael bedvar Bilam limsar ma'al b'Hashem al dvar pa'ar. The women were involved and caused Bnei Yisrael through the counsel of Bilam to sin against Hashem in the matter of Baal Pa'ar. And indeed, this is a lesson in personal responsibility. There are always factors that perhaps push us to make the wrong decisions. But at the end of the day, everybody gets his due. But we are all responsible for our own actions. A very important lesson for the people to hear at this time. In the aftermath of this war, Moshe instructs the soldiers about the laws of Tumah. And this, of course, speaks to the application of the laws that they have learned previously about Tumas Meis. Now they're bringing it into practical application. In addition, instructions are given about the division of the booty between the soldiers and the rest of the people and the Mishkan and the Levium. Moshe was told to make an accounting of all of the spoils, and the Torah lists these spoils and goes into a very specific accounting of how much tax is due to Elazar, to the Mishkan, and to the Levium. V'harimosa meches l'Hashem. Recall that we spoke about Bamidbar being literally the book of accounting, and here we see another example of this. This division of the booty between the Mishkan, the Levium, Elazar, the people back home, and the soldiers is a way of ensuring that the victory that they had over Midian does not go to their heads, and that every venture needed the imprint of sanctity, as demonstrated by the spoils, some of the spoils going to the Mishkan, going to the Levium, going to the Kohen. In this way, it also ensures that their victory does not go to their heads, and they realize that their victory was due to HaKadosh Baruch Hu being with them and ensuring their victory. And we also see this transition. Remember we spoke about the Netziv's division and categorization of this Sefer, that at the beginning of the Sefer we see open miracles, we see Bnei Yisrael living in a completely miraculous existence. And then in the second half of the Sefer, we see that Bnei Yisrael are slowly transitioning into this more natural existence. So they are engaging in battle, they have a division of the soldiers, they ostensibly take weapons, but the Yad Hashem is obvious. They do not lose one soldier. Ezri me'im Hashem. Their help is directly from God. And this is another training ground for them to have the proper perspective once they enter the land. They will not have the Anane HaKavod. They will not have the Mun or the miraculous water. Nevertheless, God's orchestration and providence will be evident to those who desire to see it. Now here within this parsha as well, Elazar HaKohen, Aaron's son, instructs Bnei Yisrael to take any of the utensils that they took from the spoils of war from Midian, and they were to pass them through a fire or water, depending on the material, before using it. And herein is the source for kashering and toveling and possibly hagala. But it's interesting to note here how Elazar, Aaron's son, is now assuming some responsibility for teaching the people. He's featured very, very prominently within this parsha. We have Vayomer Elazar HaKohen El Anshei HaTzava. He is telling them what to do with the booty. Vayikach Moshe Elazar HaKohen Esazav Meitam. He's involved with separation of the spoils and dividing it up. Vayetze Moshe Elazar HaKohen V'chol Nesiyei Eda Likrasam. He, along with Moshe, is going to greet the people after they finish the war. So here we see that Aaron has passed on, and now his son Elazar is taking a more central role at this point, all pointing to the transition that is going on in our parsha, and as we are nearing this generation that is moving towards accomplishing their goal of finally entering the land. So the last part of Parshas Matos is the request from the Shvatim of Reuven and Gad to Moshe Rabbeinu, that now that a lot of the Transjordan side was conquered, the lands of Sichon and Og, because they had so much cattle, they make a request that they take this land on the Transjordan side for themselves, because they had so much cattle and it was a very good land for their cattle for grazing. And this request did not sit well with Moshe at all. And he says to them, do you want to separate yourselves from the rest of your nation? You want to sit pretty while the rest of the nation goes to war? Vayomer Moshe levnei Gad v'levnei Reuven ha'achechem yavo l'milchama v'atem teshvu po. Your brothers will go out to war and you're going to sit pretty over here. Furthermore, Moshe sees and he's sort of having flashbacks and saying, are these echoes? Are their requests echoes and the cries of rejection of the land by the spies 38 years earlier? And he says, V'lama t'ni'un a slave b'nei Yisrael me'avar al ha'aret asher nasan lahem Hashem. Why are you turning the minds of the people from wanting the land? Ko'asu v'sechem b'sholchiyosam mikadosh barne'a l'irosas ha'aret. This is what your forefathers did. This is what the previous generation did. When I sent them to spy out the land, this turned into a terrible tragedy where that entire generation died out. They can't even enter the land. ויחר אף השם ביום ההוא וישבה לאמור, אם יראו אנשים העולים ממצרים מבין 20 שנה ומעלה, אז האדמה אשר נשבעת לאברהם, ליצחק, ליעקב, כי לא מלאו אחרי. You know what happened when they rejected the land. And now you want to repeat the same mistakes that your forefathers did? V'hine kamtem tachas avoseichem, tarbuz anashim chata'im lispos od, acharon af Hashem el Yisrael. You want to come again and repeat the exact same mistakes that the previous generation did? But thankfully, this did not turn into the terrible tragedy that occurred to the spies 38 years earlier. The people respond to Moshe's concerns respectfully, and an agreement was reached. The dialogue between the two tribes and Moshe is actually used as a model for legal agreements where both sides are presented and both sides of the agreement are restated by each side. Moshe had concerns about the people being apathetic to the land as well as being apathetic to the rest of the people who had to engage in conquering the land. Furthermore, the tribes settling would cause and detract from the unity of the nation. So Reuven and Gad agree to leave their families and their livestock and indeed join the rest of the people in their conquest, which will have lasted for 14 years under the leadership of Yehoshua. A mutually acceptable agreement was reached. So while we begin to get nervous, perhaps, when we first read of the request, is this, deja vu all over again? The issues, unlike the previous generation, get resolved, indicating their noble intentions and their ability to really hear the arguments that are laid out for them. They had an argument, Moshe had a concern, but their arguments were not so loud as to drown out the other side. The result was a peaceful resolution. And as Rabbi Jonathan Sacks describes it, he says the ensuing dialogue is a master class at negotiation. And this negotiation led to Reuven and Gad, and later on the Pasuk tells us that Chatzi Shevet Menashe, the half of the tribe of Menashe, also joined Reuven and Gad. Either they initially joined the request and the Torah just doesn't mention it, or it perhaps Chazal point out that perhaps Moshe insisted that half of the tribe of Menashe, is really only two families of the tribe of Menashe, join Reuven and Gad so that they sort of create this bridge between part of the Shevet Menashe on one side and part of Shevet Menashe on the other side of the Jordan, so that there would be a forced ties and forced connections between the two sides. But in any case, this is resolved. And as we began our parsha, speaking about the importance of speech, the importance of keeping their words, here they are using their words, they are using their power of speech to negotiate, to come up with an agreement. They are also promising that they will uphold their end of the bargain. And that really connects us back to the beginning of our parsha when we spoke about the importance of integrity, the importance of using our speech to elevate. And here, this was a demonstration of the people engaging in a very productive dialogue, which resulted in a mutually acceptable arrangement. Thank you for studying together with the OU Women's Initiative.